It is it's an incredible gospel for so many things, and I'm going to jump over some things just because I don't have time to cover all of them, but there's this lovely theme that is so curious to me, and it comes in John, and I just love it. It's this description of light and dark, this idea of light and darkness and the coming of dark and the coming of light. And it's expressed in so many ways. I mean, Jesus says, night is coming when no one can work. We can work in the dark. We all know that. I mean, shoot, I've done road trips in the dark. My father used to work second shift. Most of his job was in the dark. I mean, you know, in the dark, and that's, I mean, we have electrical power. It's not like they're literally in the dark. We were working under lights. But that's not what it means. He's obviously pointing to something more. He's not just saying that it's dark. I mean, even they had torches and braziers. They could do things in the dark, so to speak. But he says this darkness is coming. He said, I am the light of the world. While I'm in the world, I am its light. The darkness is coming. And what does he encounter? He encounters a man who's never seen light. In more ways than one. The man born blind. It's a struggle. Because a man born blind meant that either he was a sinner or his parents were sinners. And his blindness is a result of their sin. It's a result of their evil. It's a result of their own failing. This notion, this idea that somehow sin is attached to physical infirmity, it was deeply set in the culture. And so they pass this blind man every day, and they don't have to do too much to help this blind man because he's a sinner. Or at the very least, his parents are. And he is the result of that sin, and therefore he should be punished. So this man not only didn't know the light, he obviously couldn't see, he was born blind, but he didn't know the light of God either. He was in total darkness, in every sense of that word, denied from God and living in the dark. And it was clear, even to his disciples. They said, who sinned? His parents or him? It was even clear in their minds. Here's this man born blind. Rabbi, who sinned? Jesus didn't say either of them sinned. He experiences this darkness because it is our opportunity to do something more. And so, what does he do? This is so fascinating to me in so many ways. He makes clay and he rubs it on his eyes. I want you to think about this from a completely detached standpoint. We know what happens. I'm aware of that. But you encounter a blind man. And he rubs dirt in his face. It's kind of a really strange situation. It's like, why don't I get a paper cut and get you to pour lemon juice all over it? You know, let's insult me a little further. I'm blind. Sure, let's rub dirt in my face. That makes sense. And he says, go to the pool of Siloam. Meaning scent. I'm sending you to the place of the pool of the scent. Go there and wash. Why? Because that's where you are going. To see light. And he washes, and he's restored, and suddenly he can see for the first time in his life. I can't even fathom what this would be like. I grew up seeing all my life, sometimes not very well, but I grew up seeing all of my life. I could always see light. I knew what colors were, familiar with prisms. He had no point of reference for any of this. I think about this, and I try and fathom what it would be like to see light for the very first time. Honestly, sometimes I get up in the morning and I sort of stagger over to the bathroom and I turn on the light, and it's so overwhelming in that moment to flip the switch that I nearly fall over. This brilliant light that just suddenly appears and it's just blinding. This overwhelming light. This man had never seen light at all. The very first time, it had to be almost frightening. To suddenly be able to see, to have a point of reference that he'd never had before. And have it in two ways. Not only could he see, not only could he appreciate life for what it is and be able to travel as such, but suddenly the very notion of his sin is gone. Because the attachment to this blindness meant that he was the sinner, meant that he was cast out, meant that he was hated by God. Why would he bother to pray? Why would he bother to have a relationship with a God who already hates him? But the sin is gone. The sin is gone, and a whole new life opens up before him. And this is where it gets even stranger. This is where it gets even more curious. Because here we have this man who was born blind, who they pass by every day. They pass by this man, and yet, now that he can see, they look at him and go, is it even him? I don't know. No, it just looks like the man was born blind. Others say, yeah, that's him. He even has to point out to those, yeah, it's me. I was the guy who sat here and begged for everything in my life because I was blind and I was a sinner. And I begged for whatever I could get. And they can't take it in. The people who pass by, the people who can see light, the people who do have that opportunity for God, the people who can appreciate the fact that they have vision, they can't even see it. It's right in front of them and they can't appreciate it. It's a strange thing about light. A little bit can tell you all kinds of nice things. So much of it can utterly wash out your ability to see at all. It can overwhelm your ability to even take in what you're used to. You drive down any particular path regularly, and suddenly you just don't see things anymore. We appreciate the light, but we don't see it. I'll give you my favorite example. When I lived in New Lenox, my parents had an 89 Capri station wagon. It is the quintessential station wagon. It is a huge, giant box on wheels. If you've seen one, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't miss it. Wherever you see a station wagon, it is the quintessential station wagon. The door swung sideways. It was the thing. You know, when you have six kids, you gotta fit them somewhere. It's huge. We came to a four-way stop, a standard four-way stop that we come to hundreds of times before. We looked, everything was fine. Started to go through the intersection. The man to the left blew through the stop sign, hit my mother. Didn't do a lot of damage. We fixed the car, we got the car. But I'll never forget, he got out of the car, and his very first words were, I didn't even see you. How do you miss a giant station wagon? It's right there. The truth of the matter is very straightforward. We get so used to certain intersections. We get so used to certain parts of our life. We get so used to certain areas of our life where things have to be exactly as we have seen them, exactly as we have seen them before, and exactly as they will be seen in the future. We get so locked in on that we don't even see the stuff around us anymore. And we get so blinded by that light that we could park a station wagon right in front of us and we wouldn't even see it. And we lose what's right in front of us. And that's what happens. This blind man, who they have this worldview, and they're sure that this man is born in his sin and locked out, and this is where he's stuck, and this is where he's isolated, and this is where he finds himself. This blind man is brought to the Pharisees, the ones who are supposed to be leading the people, the ones who are supposed to be the example. He brings them to them. And they don't say, rejoice for you can see. He doesn't say, rejoice for your sin is removed. They say, are you sure you were born blind? Really sure? That's got to be the strangest question ever asked somebody. The only thing I can equate it to was when I broke my arm and someone asked me, are you sure you really heard it and it's not just in your head? Mercifully, they had no medical profession, then I saw my mother and we went to the doctor. And x-rays are very conclusive, by the way. When you break your arm, they're very conclusive in that sense. But it's insulting. They ask a man who was born blind, who lived his entire life in darkness, are you sure you're really blind? Maybe it was just in your head. Because this being healed stuff, that doesn't fit into my worldview. I'm pretty much locked into my path. That doesn't work for me. It couldn't possibly be that the Christ is here. It couldn't possibly be that Jesus cleaned you. He didn't obey the Sabbath. It doesn't work into our vision of what should be. And I think that's such a powerful reminder to all of us. God does not always work inside our world vision. God does not feel restricted by our world vision. It's the same challenge we face with science all the time. Science sets it up, and science builds these parameters, and science has this empirical data, and they're trying to prove one thing after another, and that's awesome. Science can teach us incredible things through the empirical data that it teaches us. But then it confronts God, and it doesn't fit into the worldview, and then suddenly it's like, nah, that doesn't fit. We'll just push it out. It's not really there. And the challenge is that we come down to some kind of argument. Show me that God exists by some kind of argument. Well, I'm telling you right now that gravity had the same issues. What do you mean? I mean that we were in the 16th century before all of the scientists would generally agree that objects fell at a constant. Galileo leaned out the side, dropped two objects of two vastly different weights, and they fell at the same time. And they looked at him and said, "Are you sure you did that right?" The problem is that we try to apply this principle to God. And we say, well, if it doesn't fit the worldview, then it must not be it. It must not be the one that we know. The truth of the matter is that God is not about proof. It's about meeting Him. It's about that encounter with God. And I think this is such an incredible thing because we saw it last week and we see it again this week. We see the one who brings the good news, who shares this evangelical message, who brings the Word of God, who shares God, is not the holy person in the group. It's not the leader in the group. It's not an exceptional person in the group. It's the public sinner in the group. And I think that's such a powerful thing for all of us. Because when we think to ourselves, I don't know if I should be the one to bring in God to this conversation. I don't know if I'm really the one called to be the evangelizer in this situation. You know, I'm not holy, or I don't know the catechism that well, or I'm not really good at this, or, you know, I'm not that good at these things. I'm a sinner. I have news for you. God uses the sinner to bring the good news to others. God uses not who we think are the worthy ones, but the ones that He makes worthy. You know, it's the great vocation poster that I saw over and over again. God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies the called. That's for all of us. We, the sinners, are called to give witness to what we know. And here's what we know. Blind man said, "I was blind, and now I see." And that man made it happen. Think about it from your own faith. It's no different. Share with what you know about God. Share the relationship you have with God and how you come to know Him. That's what being an evangelizer is. That's what it is to share our faith. Called by God to share the good news that we know. And don't worry about the light. Sometimes it's blinding. But if we see it for what God is showing us, we can even see the station wagon parked right in front of us.